My name is Susan Rands, and this is the beginning of a series of examinations of lesbian and gay issues. And to start out, I've spent a lot of time during these rainy days sitting in Koinonia's library writing. And I just wrote sort of a little manifesto piece on what I want to do here while we do these sessions. So I'll just read it to you. I'm not here this week to philosophize or theologize about being lesbian or gay for two reasons. I'm an activist, a pragmatist, and a realist. I deal with things as they are for my community, not how they could be in the best of all possible worlds or how they should be. Second reason is that intellectualizing, theorizing, or justifying the existence of lesbians and gays is really not the responsibility of lesbians and gays. We are busy living and trying to do the best that we can in trying circumstances, and that living is the subject that I'll concern myself with. Lesbians and gays comprise 10% of the population, conservative estimate. And if I can give you a good picture, good clear picture of the lives of this 10% of the population, then I think the theorizing can be done in a little more enlightened atmosphere, and then I'll consider my job well done. This is not to say, of course, that I don't welcome dialogue with you on theories and troubles and doctrines. I hope it will arise, but my job as I see it will not be the presentation of explanations, only of realities. Another caveat just as important, don't expect my presentations to be sad, full of confessions of misery and tribulations. True, there are a lot of frightening manifestations of homophobia these days, and we'll talk about those. But I get the impression that sometimes that non-gays expect lesbians and gays to be sad and pained, yoked with the unbelievable burden that they're just getting by with. It seems to make non-gays feel a little bit better about themselves so that they can be compassionate that way. I'm sorry, I'm just not a sad person. I'm often angry. I'm excited about the differing possibilities of my life. I'm usually quite busy, and I'm mostly proud and happy, so don't expect sad. I'll speak with you directly. We won't beat around the bush. We'll search for commonality. We may even laugh now and then. See, the truth, as I see it, is you don't have to like me or agree with me, but you must come to grips with one certainty, and that's I am here. And so are hundreds of thousands of my brothers and sisters. End of little statement. And I want to say just a few words about the title of this week of presentations. I'm calling it Being Everywhere and Nowhere, an Open Examination of Lesbian and Gay Issues. Now, the Being Everywhere and Nowhere part comes from if you've ever been around any gay pride rallies or seen any kind of stuff like that, the operative slogan of the gay community is We Are Everywhere. The nowhere is a comment on my part on the fact that while being everywhere, there is still a lot of, there's a tremendous lack of clarity and a lot of instability in terms of just being able to function, have civil rights, act as the rest of the citizens of this country do. So that's the first half of the statement. And the second half of the statement is, gay and lesbian, open examination of gay and lesbian issues. I want to stress that the second half of that statement is not the issue of lesbians and gays. That to myself, I am not an issue. And so the discussion of the issue of lesbians and gays as it affects the church, as it affects causality, psychology, etc., is stuff we can talk about, but it is not the meat of these presentations. I'm hoping actually that we can use the forum on Thursday night to discuss the issue of lesbians and gays, and I will be discussing lesbian and gay issues, the realm of which I see as tonight we'll be talking about the biggest lesbian gay issue that's coming out. And then on Thursday, we'll do a little bit of stuff on civil rights issues and some of the terrifying usurpations of civil rights for gay and lesbian people. And then on Friday, we'll talk a little bit about political activism and the growing activist and political gay elected officials, et cetera, issues around the country. And we'll look at Chicago as a study. So anyway, coming out. That's what I'm going to do right now. My name is Susan Ranz. I'm a white woman of Polish extraction, working class background, born and raised in Chicago. I teach college students. I do political work. I have many friends, women and men, to whom I'm deeply committed. I love my family. I'm addicted to football on TV and canoeing in person. I love to eat Vietnamese food. In the past, I've gone to the graduate school at the University of Chicago Divinity School, cooked in and managed the Heartland Cafe, wrote technical specifications for a multinational corporation, was an aide to a Chicago alderman, and to U.S. Senator Paul Simon. I'm involved in a committed, monogamous, loving relationship. I go on vacation in the summertime, and I'm a lesbian. Now, up until that last sentence, I sounded like a pretty regular gal, didn't I? And I'd like to think I am. Most people who know me think I am. But there are some people who never get to know me because of that last sentence. They don't want to. And that's too bad, but it's really not my problem. What I've just done is known as coming out. Get the lingo. I am now out to you. You know me as out. You can say, oh, Susan, yeah, she's out. That's the phraseology. And the phraseology comes from the term, it's a shortened form of the term coming out of the closet. When one comes out of the closet, one decides to stop living in the deceit of the closet, compromising to a sort of a heterosexist, just sort of assumption that you are, of course, heterosexual, and being honest, taking control of honesty in your life and saying, no, wrong, surprise. And that moment of coming out is the major moment for most people who are lesbian or gay. And many, 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 many lesbians and gays are not out of the closet. Those of you who may be thinking at this point in time, oh, I've never met anyone who's lesbian or gay, are probably wrong. And you just don't know it. The closet is a place, the term closet encompasses exactly what it sounds like, a small, dark, confining little room that is cluttered and sort of suffocating. And when you come out of the closet, there's a lot more space out there around you. Now, that's not to say that all lesbians and gays who are out go running around the world saying, you know, with a big sign, lesbian, lesbian, no matter where you go, and everything you say and everything you do, you know, hello, I'm Susan Ranz, I'm a lesbian. Did you know I was a lesbian? I'm a lesbian. No, you don't do that. In fact, it's sort of your world is it's a series of little closets. You know, you don't just meet people casually, and it's because it's just hard work sometimes to just sort of, so you let them assume the heterosexist assumption that everyone in the world is heterosexual, obviously. There are little closets, and they're sort of closets of convenience. A story I like to think about that are my students in the Urban Studies program. Obviously, I can't, on the very first day of the Urban Studies program, John will attest to this, stand up on the first day and say, I'm Susan Ranz, I'm staff, I'm going to be teaching core course, and I'm a lesbian, because half of them won't talk to me then. So I sort of test the group and feel them out and blah, 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 and when I can finally see that the mood is there, that I can say it, some of them figure it out right away, especially the ones that are gay. But, you know, somewhere along the line in urban studies, I come out, like I'm doing to you right now. And there was one time when one of the students in my precept she was just amazed that I kept referring to my lover as my significant other. She kept saying, why do you keep calling your boyfriend a significant other? And I kept saying, oh, because I like the term more. And I just, you know, sort of let her play along with it. And somewhere around 5 weeks into the program, she got the picture and came to me in tears. I'm so sorry, I assumed that it was a boyfriend. And then I would sat her down and said, you know, hey, you know, it's okay. You know, that's what we deal with here on this planet, the heterosexist assumption. So anyway, after coming out like I just did, usually different kinds of conversations happen. Very rarely there's sort of a stunned silence, but that doesn't happen very often. Every once in a while, in fact, actually more often than you would think, the response to coming out is to the other person comes out too. So you say, I have to tell you something. I'm a lesbian. And the other person goes, so am I. So there's all sorts of different reactions, but usually a long series of questions ensues. There's like, you know, oh, you are? Well, let me think of all the questions I ever wanted to ask someone who's lesbian and gay. That's what we're going to do tonight, okay? Just to get this started. Now, some of these questions are so common that I can ask them for you, so bear with me while I run through a few of them and answer them for myself, just so I can keep my thoughts organized, but I will give us lots of time to ask our own little particular questions, and any question is legal, okay? Any question is legal. So the first question always is, you are, how do you know, or when did you know, or something along that line to elicit an autobiographical response. So that's what you're going to get right now. I think if I had the wisdom of hindsight, I could probably say, oh, I've known I was a lesbian all my life. But that's, of course, a lot of bull. I guess all I can say about it is that in my experience, throughout my life, I always spent more time in communities with women than I did with men. And it was sort of it was de facto. I went to an all-women's high school. I went to an all-women's college. And by choice, I chose that. I felt more comfortable in the company of women. And also, the high school that I went to I was in high school in the 60s, okay, from 1966 to 1970. And it was a Catholic high school that was very committed to social justice issues and had some really wild eyed women as nuns in it. And so we were sort of in those wonderful pubescent years when you're so goofy, we were getting this really good, strong dose of, you know, you young women can save the world, and it is important to be concerned about social justice and issues we were involved in doing organizing and racism and anti-war stuff. And while I was in high school, the women's movement also began, the second wave of the what was then called, I mean, the women's liberation movement, women's lib, began in the 60s. So there was a very, and because the high school I was at was very supportive of being the kind of person that was not, you know, not chasing after boys, but being serious about what's going on the planet, we were encouraged and we got lots of support for that. So boyfriends took second place always to the kinds of dynamics that we had happening at Queen of Peace High School. Now some of the people that I knew then always, you know, laugh and say, God, it was so hard to go out with Queen of Peace girls because you just were like, you know, secondary totally, because they were always working on the newest, you know, organizing project or whatever. During those years, that I think it was about my senior year in high school, the feminist movement really got rolling and consciousness-raising groups were happening, CR groups. So we had a little high school and early college CR group, some friends of mine and I. And in the context of one of these CR groups, we were talking about sexuality, and we started to talk about the possibility of did we each think that any of us ever would think about getting involved with another woman? And we had this long as CR group conversations in those days were, you know, just take long forever conversation about it, in which every person in the room agreed that probably at some point in their life, of course, they would think about it. And we made a commitment to each other that if any of us ever did, it was going to be okay to tell the other ones. And that the other ones would all be supportive. And that was a miraculous moment in my life for me, because that guaranteed me that, and I wasn't even conscious of it at the time, but I can hear it, you know, sort of resonant in my past, that sort of made it okay for me not to struggle with the fact that not much later I would become involved with another woman. It actually happened in college. And so that I sort of was able, that's why I said I didn't have a sad story, I sort of was able to bypass all of the angst and the, you know, some stories that you hear of, you know, people worrying all their lives. I knew I had a home that I could go to of supportive people that would say, whoa, you're kidding, you know, and that would be what would happen. So that my experience finally then of getting involved with another woman as in my freshman year in college sort of seemed kind of just part of the continuum. It wasn't a wall I banged up against. It was there. It felt okay. It felt that it was okay with people that I knew, and so therefore I didn't have any high level of self-hate connected to it that sometimes people talk about. So, and basically since that time, 1971, I have predominantly been involved in relationships with other women, and most of them have been sort of long-term and very loving and committed relationships. Okay, that's usually the first question that comes out, that's the answer. Second question is sort of the dualistic, it sort of reflects the sort of dualistic kind of consciousness, right? It's the person usually looks at you and goes, so does that mean you don't like men? And I'm always tempted to say something really, really snotty at that point in time, but the answer obviously, of course, is of course not. It does not mean that. 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 Please let's not think that just because I prefer the intimate company of women means that therefore I don't like men. I have my men friends, I love very dearly, and I hope they can attest to the fact that my relationship with them is as warm and loving as it possibly can be, because I don't deal in those dualisms. I think it's very weird. Now, that isn't to say that I don't have a strong reaction to what might be, I mean, to the ism, to sexism, or to what some people, a lot of urban studies students are now referring to as white maleism, you know, or what some lesbian separatist folks, and we'll talk about separatism in a minute, you know, call the patriarchy. But those are all isms, and the patriarchy is a big ism and a big structure, and that's not men. You know, and I really want to make that distinction really, really clear. Now, there is, having said that, a strain of political thought, okay, not essential being, but political thought among lesbians that is separatist, lesbian separatism, and the you know, underlying philosophy of that political thought is that we will separate ourselves from the patriarchy and from white maleism and all of that stuff, and try to create a woman-centered community. And that is a political movement. Some people would say it's a stage, like any separatist stage sometimes is. But it is not by definition that someone who identifies himself as a lesbian is therefore a separatist and does not like men. Boom, that's the end of that. Okay, next question. How are we doing on time? We're doing okay. the next question is usually the legalist question. And it goes something like this. But isn't it true that lesbians and gay men really don't have as committed relationships, or they sort of aren't really into primariness in their significant others? And it's usually then followed by, and don't you wish you could get married? That's the legalist question. And I want to say a few things about my perception, and this is one woman's opinion, of lesbian and gay relationships. Lesbians and gays have the same myriad types of relationships that that non-gays do, okay? You have some people who can't get committed for longer than 3 minutes, and you have people who are deeply, deeply committed to each other and stay bound together forever. And that is true for both lesbians and gay men. Now, there is a perception, and it's slightly true, that that gay men tend to have more sort of casual sex relationships, and it's harder for them to get involved in long-term loving, caring relationships. And I just want to sort of offer a way of thinking about that lesbians tend to be nesters and set up long-term relationships. Just to offer a way of thinking about that, if women are socialized to be nurturing, to look for permanence, to be the keepers of the hearth, the nurturers, and men are socialized to be aggressive, competitive, somewhat macho type stuff. And if you take two people who are both men and two people who are both women, that those values are going to be somewhat reflected in the relationship. You're going to have to work on those things in ways that non-gays don't. I mean, it's a different kinds of struggle, so that you will find some gay males in a position of having relationships that don't last, that are very sort of superficial, blah 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 blah, and that is reflected, and it's sort of a common myth. But I want to also tell you that there are many gay men that are very deeply committed to each other and involved in very, very long-term relationships. So don't buy that myth completely. It's might be statistically closer to being correct, but it's not. It's as a distinction, it's completely a myth. So having said that, I do believe, however, that lesbian and gay relationships are up against some tough challenges. You've got to work pretty hard in those relationships, because you're already starting from a couple of steps back in terms of what you're going to have to face out there in the world, starting with the heterosexist assumption. How many of you have experienced two single women living on your block, and you just assume that they're a couple of spinsters that happen to be sharing a home? I mean, that kind of thing. Starting with the heterosexist assumption, how do you build a relationship when everybody out there, including the media, including the cultural myth, assumes you're not who you are? So you have to fight through that and fight and build a relationship. Two issues of just simple legality. There are horror stories that have been told of people who, intensive care units don't allow anyone except spouses or immediate families in. Someone's lover is hit by a car and is dying, and they are not allowed in to go in to see them. This happens constantly. So there's all sorts of struggles that you have to struggle with. I'm not saying we struggle harder than you do. I'm saying it's different struggles. And so that struggle to build, to make a relationship last is some hard work. And most lesbians and gays that I know are working pretty hard at it. The marriage question is one that I don't quite know what to say about. If I were to answer it for myself, I would say no, I don't really feel that I need to be married in terms of legal and, I mean, in terms of cultural justification and religious justification. I get angry sometimes about marriage because of the simple pragmatic reality that if you're non-gay and you're getting married, first your friends throw you a shower and they give you all the things you need to start a home. You get towels, you get blankets, you get cups, you get, you know, silver stuff, you get all the stuff that, you know, you need. That's important stuff. Then you get married and people give you money, lots of money, and you go on vacation and you do all this stuff and everybody's happy for you. I mean, that's, you know, me, I gotta buy my own plates, you know? I mean, that's a real, think about what a good head start that is in the world. So that's where I have my bristle with it. However, I do believe that on the legality question, that there should be some, I mean, it is one of the most difficult questions for lesbian and gay people are these issues of, you know, of will writing, of insurance beneficiaries, of going into ICUs, of things like that. That here you are in what to you is the hardest work committed relationship you've ever done in your life, and you are very happy about it, and it's very secure, and yet you have to struggle with these things that are just not. I mean, most non-gay people never even think that they're getting a little extra edge with. How am I doing on time here? Okay, I'll skip this next question and I'll go to another biggie that always happens. And this one's much more directed to lesbians than it is to gay men. And it's this sort of wistful look, and people look at you and say, "Don't you wish you could have kids?" And I always want to laugh and say, "I can." I'm a woman. It works. The baby, you can have one. It does. It all works, and I'm saying that sort of facetiously, but don't assume, please, that lesbians do not have children. They indeed do. I know many, 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 many children of lesbians, both children that came from, you know, prior marriages, single unwed mother type children, and also, you know, planned for children, and that can be done in a myriad of ways. We are living in the 20th century, folks. So there's things like artificial insemination, there's things, all sorts of things. So don't kid yourself that the two women living down the block with children aren't just living together out of convenience. That there are many, 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 many lesbians who have children. And then there are lesbians, just like there are straight women, who maybe don't want to have children. And so therefore make great aunts and function in extended families and are wonderful, take care of their friends' children. In fact, the people that I know that are most committed to that are friends of mine who are non-gay, who are just are, you know, sort of busy people. I mean, women who are active in their public life and are not, and don't see themselves as being someone who would be great mothers, but they're great babysitters and great aunts and stuff like that. And very many lesbians do that as well. Gay men, there are gay fathers. It is a little more difficult for gay men to, just because of custody laws, a father who then comes out as gay probably wouldn't have the child, the custody of the child, though that's happening. We'll talk about that in next session, or the session after. No, next session. But gay men are some of the most nurturing men I know. In fact, my very closest male friend is a gay man who is the most nurturing man I know in the world. And he has worked that through with himself by becoming the friend and buddy of every child in his family, of his friends' friends, of, you know, etc. And does the most wonderful job of being with children I've ever seen. So the barren wife approach, I want to just sort of dispel that myth. One more question, and then we'll go to yours. And it's another one where my story isn't so sad. There's people in this room that can attest to this. It goes something like, aren't you afraid of what this is going to do in your life? Aren't you afraid it's going to ruin your career? Aren't you afraid you won't be able to get as far as you can because of this secret that you have? Their heterosexist assumptions and homophobia in the workplace is a real reality, folks, and I won't deny that it's there and that many people have very hard times in their jobs. My lover is in a very sensitive position in government in Chicago. Would the information about her relationship with me could be used politically against who she works for? So she must be very circumspect about who she tells, what she does. But she also happens to be a person who does that anyway. So it's not that big of a struggle for her. But for me, I have never been in a working situation where everyone that I work with didn't know that I was a lesbian. And I hope in my current working situation, part of the reason that I work there is because I'm a lesbian. And that there are to be a resource and a support for young college students who are struggling with issues of sexuality, and to be a model. So that it is also possible to be a productive member of society, proclaiming and joyously representing the fact that you are lesbian or gay. But again, that isn't true for everyone, and I want to defer some of the more difficult parts of that till tomorrow's session, where we will look at issues of civil rights and even more terrifyingly, anti-gay violence. I'll defer the rest of the answer to that question to a whole session tomorrow. So, okay, in terms of timing here, you've gotten a short form of a coming out. If it's never happened to you before, now you can say, gosh, someone came out to me. And that's usually how it goes, but now I would like to open the floor to anybody else's questions about any myths you want to dispel or things you've heard about lesbians and gays. Stan.
As a parent, if you have a suspicion or a feeling that possibly one of your children is lesbian, how do you approach that? How do you help them if that's true? It may not be true. If they are, how do you help them come out so that you don't have this barrier between you as a parent child?
Right. I have two answers to that. One is to say that in lesbian and gay circles, we talk about it as the sixth sense, but I think it could sort of be extended that to the fact that, to say that I think if you think that you suspect that your daughter is lesbian, you're probably right. And I think that that's just... I can't even say why that is, except that there is, it's what we call the sixth sense. You know, I mean, somebody sees somebody go down the street, do you think, oh yeah, and you're usually right. I mean, statistically, you're usually right. But that, I'm not saying therefore go and say this, but that's a tough one for me because I'm in the position, the opposite position. My parents, I know that I'm a lesbian, but I haven't said that to them. And the reason that I haven't said that to them is very pragmatic. And my brother, who I have talked to, I have one brother, and he agrees with me totally, as my mother is not well, she's hypertense, and she tends to be a person who worries all the time and blames herself for everything. I mean, if it's the weather's bad in Florida when I'm there on vacation, it's her fault. So I don't want to mess with, I mean, I could push my mother on that one, but I also don't want to mess with her health. And my brother totally agrees with me on that. My father I'll tell you what my father does, and if he would do this one step further, then I would go, well, thanks, Dad, finally, you know. Because I have always believed that if my parents got the nerve to ask me, that means they did most of the work, okay, that they need to do to even get to ask that question, so that I wouldn't have to be climbing, we could meet 50-50. Mm-hmm. And my father would say things to me like, a relationship I was in for 7.5 years ended, and it ended at the same time that my brother's relationship that he'd been in for 2 years ended, and he was living at the house with my parents, mooning and, you know, sobbing and writing sad music and everyone was so worried about Rob, and the same thing happened to me, and I was feeling very, of course I knew it was a box I put myself in, but my father was driving me back to my house while this happened once, from my south side home to my north side home, and said, well, gosh, you put in a lot of time. You and Linda were roommates for a long time. That was a lot of time that you spent. And I said, yeah. And he said, you know, well, and he sort of hung there for a minute. And if he had just sort of said, are you sad about it? Or does it hurt you? Instead, he said something like, well, you know, you have to be real careful about time. You have to guard your time. You know, time is something that's very important. You know, and so that, you know, I mean, it was just a. I'm not saying it's a parent's responsibility, but it's always, it helps sometimes to get a little indication that you aren't just jumping into the void to say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, by the way, And it's a tough question. People deal with it differently. I know people who have just gone home, walked into their parents' home and said, by the way, Mom and Dad, I feel I must tell you I'm a lesbian. And they, you know, and then deal for the next 2 years with the reaction of, they're doing that for themselves and not for their parents. Do you know what I mean? In some way, I mean, there's not a lot of consideration of what happens to the parents when you just go, oh, bring, you know. I mean, you have to sort of think about cultural values. You have to think about what the effect of that is.
Yeah. What if I came and said, I have a hunch, I have a feeling, it could be, are you?
Katie's got an answer, Barry's got an answer.
Yeah, only because I've hung around with lesbians all my life, and I've had a lot of people call me, you dyke this, you dyke that, and you know, so I just pictured your daughter going, oh no, my whole father makes me gay, you know, there's a chance. She's probably right. You're probably right. But you might not be. So, I mean, an approach would be to take it as another up here. You go, wow, I took a course while I was at Holden.
There you go.
On lesbian and gay issues, and I am blown away. Or just anything, just to indicate, you know, your openness and or even make up a discussion that you had that would give her the opportunity to go, I'm so glad to hear that, Dad, because I want to tell you, you know, but watch the other thing. I mean, because if, and the other thing is, even if she is gay, but she's not even out to herself, it may be very terrifying to hear from you, her mini-god in her life, that you see it before she's willing to. So that's.
But on the other hand,
but it's really wonderful that you're sitting here asking that.
Yeah, and I would think it'd be terribly important to put out a sense to her and to the fetch.
Well, I'll tell you. I would like to hold that question. I have a lot of responses to that, but I think I want to use that because that's a little bit of what I talked about the issue of lesbians and gays instead of lesbian and gay issues. I want to try to make the forum on Thursday night be around this, that issue especially. But I want to I'll answer it quickly and sort of generally to say this. The reason I say that is not my issue is that, see, I am a lesbian, and so I'm already here like this. No, it's not. I'm not making this to be funny. I'm already here, and so what do I do about it? I happen to believe that God created creation the way he wanted it to be, and God made me. And so when we start to pull apart the biblical stuff, it's a discussion I'm really willing to get into, but I also really have to make the stand very clearly that says, it's in some ways I can't concern myself with that, because maybe I should back up and say a few words about the whole question of orientation and preference. Please understand that the operative term always is and should be sexual orientation, not sexual preference. Using the term sexual preference makes it sound like you went to the store and there was a bunch of cereal and you preferred Wheat Chex. That whole choice question is so clouded and so muddy, and one that I think it's being used. I mean, my political orientation and my political analysis is that when people use the word sexual preference and start to use choice, they use the concept of choice. They're trying to say, look, this is you chose this, so change. You know, why should we give, in fact, it's said that the right-wing political people say, why should we give civil rights to people who chose? I mean, black people didn't choose to be black, but gay people choose to be gay, so why should they get equal housing, equal opportunities in employment, et cetera, et cetera? So that question is a real tough one, and if indeed, and then if we go back even further to the other question of, you know, the psychological and the origin questions, you know, how do people become gay? Do they have dominant mothers? Do they have funny chromosomes? Blah, 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 blah. And we don't know the answer to that. It's very hard then for me to get to concern myself about, to sort of divert myself from living my life and the challenges of that to trying to intellectualize or theorize or theologize about the six passages in the Bible. Plus, there are people around here that can do that better than me, and I'm going to invite them to have a discussion a little bit around that in the forum on Thursday night, because it's I know it's a burning issue, but it's one that it's real hard to ask a gay or lesbian person unless that gay or lesbian person is also a committed Christian activist. Like, I would go in the tape library and listen to Dan Spencer's tape on being Christian and gay. He does a wonderful job on it, and I listen to it myself. But I would say, you know, that person is a person then that wants to answer this question and debate it and can do it well. I'm coming from the perspective that says, yeah. You guys can all talk about me. Meanwhile, I've got to keep being me, and I've got to keep doing it straightforward and the best I can. And Romans 1:24, notwithstanding, what am I going to do? You know, shoot myself? You know, no. Too many lesbians and gays did because of Romans 1:24. And so, or I think it's Romans 1:24. I'm not even sure. I think that's. All I want to say on that subject right now, and we'll talk about it on Thursday. Yeah, yeah. Come on, this is your chance, folks. This is your chance. You're not going to get a chance like this again. Jeff?
One of the things that intrigues me is when people guess you wrong. I've been in situations where I've been guessed wrong. And I find it to be a poignant situation because I generally like the men that are attracted to me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. I don't. Mm-hmm. But generally, they're being sweet and being nice and being gentle. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of enjoy conversations with people like that and whatnot. But it's hard for me to figure out how to bring up that I'm not gay.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it needs to be.
Katie's real good at this stuff.
If that's Katie. Appropriate to bring up, or just blurt it out, or because it may be that the person would be truly offended. I mean, I would be truly offended if I was making nice conversation maybe I wouldn't. With the woman and just sort of, you know, spending some time and they say, look, Jeff, you know, I'm a lesbian, so I don't want to talk, you know. So
don't get any ideas.
It's a situation of some anxiety and some, you know, just not knowing quite.
Well, I don't know. I just, I was jumping on it because I think you were there even one time most recently. Sometimes people are just real plain out hitting on you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I mean, when somebody's hitting on you, I know it's a unique situation for men. Girls, we've been in it all the time, but it's a little strange to be hit on by a woman, but it's the same message. Not here, hon. Wrong door.
Yes.
You know? I can point you to a few other doors. But, hey, want a drink? That's as far as it's going here. You know, the other thing that I've learned, I mean, I had to learn a lot about homophobia. My own homophobia, playing ball with a team that was half lesbian women, and in Chicago, softball is very serious, so if the opposing team can't beat you legally, they'll try and beat you verbally from the sidelines, and, you know, it's just a bunch of men out there, oh, they're all dykes, you know, and I attacked people. I mean, I found myself so homophobic at one stage in my life that I just, they were my good friends, but I didn't want to be thought of as a dyke, you know, and getting a little crazy myself to make sure that this jerk, you know, knew something about my sexual preference, you know? I mean, I don't think I'm a dyke, you know, is sort of the way it evolved now. But I really don't. Jeff, you're a very kind person. I think the kindest thing you could do is to someone is go, do you think I'm gay? Are you another person who thinks I'm gay?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not. I'm with that person over there. And she'd get mad if I walked out with you.
That's right. Katie, by the way, is really, truly a good expert on this because of having been a friend of mine for 22 years, and my best friend, and one of those people who said she would support me, no matter what, at that beginning time, and also has, I mean, we all sort of hang around together in large groups of both non-gay and lesbian women, and non-lesbian and lesbian women, and that's fine, and it's just we have wonderful times and we have great interchanges with each other. And learn a lot from each other. Yes, Pat.
I just wanted to give Diane a little support because I think, but I know you don't want to talk about that particular.
But talk to each other.
What, I guess what I'm leading into is, and she may have been thinking of this too. I know that there are gay men who have been married, have been heterosexual, and have. You said they had children and then they became homosexual, right?
Right.
And is that a possibility? With
in reverse, or what?
No, I'm asking you that. Is it a possibility that you or your friends would be lesbian for a while and then change and become heterosexual?
Go ahead.
I think usually people go. Usually, if people go for the. People are sort of forced into the heterosexual thing, and I think frequently, especially in the last generation, men and women who had a different orientation would be married for a while and figure it out over time, but the option was really not there in a lot of small towns.
Yeah, we'll talk a lot about that tomorrow.
Okay.
I mean, no, just about that aspect of how prior to the Stonewall riots in 1969, what gay and lesbian life was like, when it was totally underground. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
I just think that people tend to go in the harder direction and stay there. That is, it's much harder to be homosexual than heterosexual. So if someone ends up becoming homosexual, it's because they probably started out gay, lesbian, and they're not gonna. It's not a preference. I agree with you. It's a much harder life. And people will do it because they want it. People do it because that's who they are.
One thing I do want to say, though, and it's something that maybe we can also, you know, just think about and talk about as the week goes by, is that I also think that there is sort of a sexuality continuum, and that there are, you know, if you put 100%, I don't like the word homosexual, lesbian or gay on this side, and 100% heterosexual, which is also a very terrible word, but straight is another one, on this side, most people, and there are studies that are being done on hormonal stuff, most people lie somewhere in the middle, that there's not such a thing. I don't like to think in terms of that dualistic term. You're either gay or you're straight, and that's it. That's all there is. You have to make this choice somewhere, or not make this choice, but you get a stamp on your head at some point, and there's no, I think that human sexuality, human need for intimacy, all that kind of stuff is very fluid, and so there's, but that then is not to say that's completely to negate the you can change question. It's almost a different question.
What is a, I mean, I probably could answer this, but I don't think I know what I was talking about. What is a bisexual? Is there a bisexual? Is there such a thing?
Sure. Sure there are. I mean, and that's that continuum.
So that would be someone who indeed feels themselves, do they feel themselves sort of androgynous or just simply drawn?
Yes and yes. Now, within lesbian and gay circles, there's a sort of a negative connotation sometimes put on bisexual, and it's become more intense, especially with men, because of the AIDS stuff. That being, okay, I'll explain to you. That some people call themselves bisexual, and what they're sort of doing is just doing sexual experiments. You know, I want to see what it's like with a girl. I want to see what it's like, you know, that kind of a thing. That I don't think, and that's what most gay and lesbian folks think is sort of is the negative connotation on the term, whereas whereas it's not that funny. that range of sexuality stuff is a whole different reality. And but what I was saying about gay men, and especially where bisexuality becomes very hard at this point, is that the issue of AIDS, meaning if most men who call themselves bisexual mean that what they do is they carry on a front out here that says that they're, you know, they're either married or they have a girlfriend and then. When nobody's around, they go off to the bars and pick somebody up, and that is a critical problem. But quote, that kind of bisexuality is a critical problem in the AIDS issue right now.
Well, now it's even criminal.
What?
Now it's even criminal.
Well, that's a whole nother question. But that's so that there's a whole different bunch of ways to talk about that. But I think what we're talking about is that range of sexuality. Then I think of course that's true. But it's a tough thing to think about and talk about. Sure, we've got 3 minutes. No, not insofar because I didn't experience any homosexuality at my school. But I think that it would have been harder. I would have been telling you a harder story now. The story that I told you at the beginning was not a hard story because of the fact that I had always been in community communities of women, was most comfortable in communities of women, and that was sort of the place that I was in, and I was also getting support from authority figures, my teachers and stuff like that, that what we were trying to build here was a community, a strong community of friends and activists and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the women's movement was boom, right when I was hitting puberty and coming through when you start to struggle with all those issues. I think if I had been in a different context that wasn't as supportive, I would have had a much more difficult struggle. And so it's sort of turning the question on its ear and saying, it's not because I went to a girls' school and went to a girls' college that I became a lesbian. It's, I am a lesbian and I'm really glad I went to I was in supportive situations all along so that I didn't have to struggle and have a lot of pain over it. Which I'm saying, when I made that little statement about pain at the beginning, that's not to say that there aren't many horribly sad stories. And that's the part of the heterosexist assumption. So, you know, that's the story there, folks. One more, we got time for one more. Nobody's got any more? Katie's got one.
I don't have a question. I just want, I've known Susan all my life, and even went to both of those girls' schools that she did, and she didn't come out to me until long after other people knew that she was, and I was like, what? I mean, I was really surprised. I was really in the fog about it. It didn't matter, but it really surprised me. And I just want to say, because she doesn't come out generally, and she doesn't wear lesbianism on her like a button or anything near as much as so many of our friends do, that I know this was hard, and it was really a gift you gave to everyone here. And I really appreciate that. I think that's very big of you.
God. And I paid her $5 to do it.